So we start with your two questions.
Devotee is considered like as a pure Kanishka, pure Madhyam, pure Uttam. And the Krishna was born. Can the pure Kanishka go like you
know? Is the other question related to that, or is it totally different?
Huh?
The other question is related to that, or?
No, it's not related.
Pure means is that the desire to please the Lord, that sincere desire is there, that makes it pure. In other words, if something is done for Krishna, like in relation to this, it's done with the desire to be free from attachment with that knowledge, doing it for Krishna, now that's considered pure, pure devotional service. It's been explained to me that that's why Rupa Goswami uses that term, anyavilasita. And otherwise, it's anya vilas. That means pure unalloyed devotionals. But the sita means anything that is pursuing that also. So pure devotionals to service is described as that which is actually unalloyed, pure unalloyed, and that which is trying to endeavor for that or come to that platform. That is also counted as pure devotional service. So you see, many times Prabhupada would say, this devotee is a pure devotee. So you see, sometimes Prabhupada is talking about what's associated with pure devotees, means those who have that sincere desire to go back to Godhead, or who are on the perfectional platform. And sometimes he refers to that just those who are perfect. You know, and sometimes he refers to it just as the pure and alloyed, like that. So different times it's talked. Yeah, naturally. Main thing in this category, the Kanista pure devotee would mean that their knowledge of Shastra would not be very great. So when somebody presents some argument or something like this, they have no idea what to say. You know, that they have the faith and all this, but they don't know what to say. Well, the Madhuram generally has something to say that might be defeated, because their knowledge is not that great. You know? But an Uttam, then you can't defeat. So from that definition it would come, though their faith and their sadhana and everything would be, you know, quite strong. Like that. Because we see that in that pastime with Kashi Mishra, then he's described as a Kanista pure devotee, even though he happens to be one of the, you know, Parshads. But the point is given that when the Mayavadis and others had things to say, he didn't know what to say. So then he came and requested that Lord Chaitanya go and speak to them so that they're quiet. He left the place, means they were saying, who is this sannyasi chanting and dancing? He should be studying Vedanta. He didn't know what to say. So then he just left the place, and he didn't argue, and then he went to, I think, some Brahmin, and had that Brahmin go to him and ask him to come to that program. So that's such a person, definitely, is not a problem. Does that make some sense?
The question was that
such a Kanista, yes. But one who is, you know, very much bewildered, doubtful, and this and that, then it's very... And this comes up in this chapter. That would be... Oh, I mean, we dealt with some of it in the last chapter about doubts. This will come up again more about doubts and all that. So that would... It just depends upon the situation. Like you see, there's devotees who may not know so much and this and that, but they don't have any doubts or any problems. They're just doing this service, whatever little service it is. Like that, so they don't advance very nicely. Someone who the same position but has so many doubts and misgivings and this and that, they're going to have difficulties because they have to overcome all that. The other one doesn't really have much. You may not think so much about these things, but so therefore difficulties don't come up. The other one may think more, but it comes up with so much difficulty. But even point is getting back to Godhead, whether it's you know, immediately or in the very near future. That's not means one gets there, because from that platform, naturally, then one would continue where one's left off. And then from such a nice attitude, there would probably be very minimal conditioning in the next manifestation. And so then we would probably find such a person, the next would be, you know, quite strong. From a very young age, we get the opportunity to take up the devotional activities. So by the time they reach maturity, they're also the devotional service would be quite mature. But it basically, it seems that one needs to get into Bhauma Vrindavan, one has to be fixed on the Lord. And basically have an idea of, you know, that one wants to, that mood of wanting to serve and all that has to be very more clear. But otherwise, and even appearing within the mission, that's still part of the pastimes. But if one's born in the family of devotees, so Krishna gives later those who are not very advanced and fall away, they generally go to the heavenly planets because they got deviated by some material desire, but they weren't very fixed. So they go to the heavenly planets when that desires are finished. Then they again come back. Then they come and they're born in the families of, you know, aristocratic persons or I think it's just aristocratic persons, unless it's also Brahmins, but I think it's aristocratic persons. Because aristocratic people, they don't need to work so much, so the free time will be there to spend for these things, these pursuits. Then if someone has become advanced in devotional service but didn't complete or, you know, fell away, that person generally is born in the family of devotees. Like that, with the specific purpose of just going back to Godhead. So sometimes, there's one letter, I think, to Janardhan, I forget what year, like 75, and he makes a point there that those parents who spoil their children, the devotee children, with sense gratification and all that, says they're doing the greatest harm. This Prabhupada is making this point that they've come, they're yogis, they're not just nonchalant devotees, that there are yogis that have come specifically to continue their progress. So then one has to be more serious about that. Those who are born in devotional service and those who are not, there may be a difference in how, from that angle. It's just a matter of how quickly they can take up devotional service, how early. So in the aristocratic family, you know, it's there. The environment is there. If they're interested, then they take it. If not, but the devotee family, then right from the beginning, then that devotional service is there in the life. So it's a more special. But it doesn't mean that we can't. We still have to be careful. Some will think, well, just they're already pure devotees, so you don't have to take care of them, don't have to do anything, you know. Janani Vasa's question, you don't have to endeavor. You know, Mayapur is a spiritual realm, you just come here, everything's perfect, it'll just automatically happen. The kids will automatically be Krishna conscious, everything will go nice, it'll be wonderful, because that's my idea of spiritual, is that it's like the heavenly planets. Nothing goes wrong in that. You know, it's perfect, everything's nice, everybody's beautiful and wonderful and dutiful and that. Though I will come, no problem, I will come bringing all my Western conditioning, you know, my Western lifestyle and all that. But everybody else will be just so wonderful, right? As if Western life, the reason we leave the West is because the Western life is not so wonderful, the culture's terrible and everything like that. But we'll bring all that attachments here and expect everyone else is going to be perfect, you know, which is not based on the Vedic principles necessarily. Or they'll all be following, but I don't have to follow. Or not understanding even the concept of culture and these things. ends up with a difficulty. Is that?
So, if a person is finished, let's say he's a devotee of Krishna, then because he's not developed the higher sentiment, then if he remembers Krishna, then he'll go somewhere else, he probably won't go to Vrindavan.
If one can remember Krishna, one goes to Krishna.
You don't develop this.
Because you see in Vrindavan, Bhavan Vrindavan, you have all levels of devotees there. So you have those, like it explains, just to give an example, because it's the only place I know where it gives some details of this, when it mentions about when Krishna played the flute and the gopis, then there were different kind of like levels of advancement. So basically two are described. One who, well, there were three. There's the Nityasiddha who came down to, how do you say, give example and association. So they went as soon as the flute was blown. Then those who from before that pastime had been very serious to serve Krishna, then they, because of that sincerity, got the association of those Nityasiddha gopis. So then they developed the same mood as them. It was called Purva Rag, means complete attachment or attraction to Krishna. So as soon as the flute blew, they went also. Yogamaya arranged. But there were another group, another category, where they had become kind of like attracted and, or whatever it is, bewildered. They got very absorbed in the whole household scene and taking care of the kids and all this and that, and, you know, all the duties of the house. And, you know, of course, Loma Vrindavan is going to be quite a nice place. So they were very happy and satisfied and all that. So when the flute blew, then their attraction wasn't enough. They hadn't attained this Purva Rag. The Rag wasn't complete. And so they got held back. Yogamaya didn't let them come. So then, in their meditation, then they thought of Krishna. And that burnt up all their reactions to pious and impious activities. So that means the anartha nivritti and all that hadn't been properly cleared. So they might be on a different platform. So it's main thing is that they think of that one has thought of the Lord, because Krishna says if one thinks of Him only, then one goes to Krishna. Because it's interesting, Bhimala Prasad was pointing out this, he made this point, that it was interesting that Krishna in the Gita says, one who thinks of Him alone at the time of death. So that means that if you think of Him and something else, it doesn't work. But if you think of Him only, so he had an experience, I think they had a car accident in that. Many times I've heard devotees when they have some of these car accidents and they find themselves separated from the body and they can see everything like that. And it's kind of like they have the choice to leave or not. And he remembers thinking of Krishna and all that, and it was, you know, very nice, and, you know, no anxieties, no problems. It's like you're basically like you're liberated. And that he was thinking of Krishna. And then, you know, he's looking at the whole scene and all that. And then he thought, well, what about my daughters? Who's going to take care of them? So he's thinking of Krishna and his daughters. So then as soon as he fixed on that, he found himself zip right back in the body. So this point of thinking of Krishna alone is important. So if one can do that, that means that this vyavasayatmika buddhi has been established. So that's what we endeavor for. And the whole process is to practice for that moment. And if one can attain that before leaving the body, because Prabhupada says that also, one can actually be situated in the spiritual realm while in the body. One can be in the eternal pastimes by meditation while one's still in this body. Then naturally that's even, you know, a different category, because you're already thinking all the time. So naturally, the only one doesn't even notice death. The difference is that you keep coming back. In meditation, you enter the pastimes, and then you come back here to the consciousness here, and then you leave and go there, and you come here. Just one time you don't come back, that's all. The residents there are impressed at your service attitude, everything's nice, and they say, why don't you stay? Why do you keep leaving? Right? But until that has been attained, until that stage has been attained, they let you go back. But as soon as they see the service attitude, the association, everything is first class, then they say, why do you go? And then when one just stays. So then here, it's seen as death. But there it's not even noticed. Like that. Because at that point one's dealing in two bodies, the spiritual body and the material. So one just leaves the material. And that's called Vastu Siddhi. Where one has two, that's called Sarup Siddhi. But when one leaves the material, then, and the Sarup is all you have, you don't have the material, it's called Vastu. Vastu Siddhi. Does that make any sense? Or? Any other question?
Can't remember.
Oh, okay. So we'll go on with this, because this covers very interesting that one will note here. Krishna says, Bhurijan gives a little synopsis here that said that chapter 3 discusses how lust covers his knowledge and how ignorance binds us with our own attachments. Krishna recommended dutiful, detached work, nishkam karma, as the means to attain transcendental knowledge. So, basically, between these two, you'll see the exact same topic is being discussed, but instead of from the angle, the emphasis on the prescribed duty, on the emphasis on the transcendental knowledge. Because we see nishkam karma is the prescribed duties performed with knowledge. So that knowledge means there'll be detachment. Detachment, no ego, like this. So now Krishna's giving the emphasis on this transcendental knowledge. So one can see how this nishkam karma functions. Because duties are duties, you're going to do them. But the difference between karma kanda and the karma yoga, the nishkam karma, is the jnana, like that. So this section then brings out very much that. So in the beginning, okay. So here, now Krishna then, in the first three verses, this first section is transcendental knowledge about Krishna. This text 1 through 10. But in the first three, Krishna establishes the parampara system. You have to get knowledge. Now, where are you going to get it? Text 1. The personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan. And Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu, in turn, instructed it to Ikshvaku. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend, and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So this establishes that Krishna said in the last chapter, he ends with, if you understand that you are transcendental to the body, mind, and the intelligence, then with this knowledge, with that steady mind, you'll be able to conquer this lust. So now, naturally, the next thing will be how to get those questions. I mean, how to get that understanding, that knowledge. So then that now, Krishna is saying, is that this knowledge is given in the parampara. He's given it before the Vivasvan was coming down, now it's been lost. Now he's going to give it to Arjuna. This is what has to be done. But we see there's qualifications here. One is the knowledge is starting with God, It's not starting somewhere else. Right? A religion has to come from God. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat panitam. It has to come from God. It can't come from somewhere else. It means you can make up your own religious process, but it's speculative. And by following that, one will not attain the Supreme. Krishna is saying prescribed duties means what comes from Him, what He is described to do. So one does that, then it's nice. And we see here that Krishna, that Arjuna is a devotee, and he's a friend. So friend means you have the other person's interest in mind. That makes a friend. It means if someone is very selfish and someone else is friendly with that person, it'll be a one-sided relationship. But when it's both ways, then we see that is actual friendship, because you have the interest of the other in mind. So a devotee has Krishna's interest. Then you can get this knowledge very nicely. Kapila Muni points this out in the third canto of Bhagavatam, that in the different kinds of devotional service, that when it's mixed, because in the beginning it may not be pure, so in the mode of ignorance, then one is very proud, one thinks one's the doer, one thinks one's very qualified because of his material abilities, he's better than others because he has all these abilities. This is the mode of ignorance. And he's a separatist, means he has his own idea. And then mixed with the mode of passion means that one worships the deity for some material gain. And he is a separatist. He has his own idea. So the one in ignorance is very, very carefully avoided. Though we'll be respectful, but we don't associate. Second also is not so recommended. Third, then he works out of duty and all these things. But there's a tendency to shy away from anything that creates too much anxiety. Like that. There's still that personal thing. But then he says, pure means you just do for Krishna because it pleases Krishna. Like that. So we see here that he said, by saying, my friend, means we have to basically cut out passion and ignorance here. Because that in passion and ignorance, there's the mood of separation. Separate, not separation. That separateness in that we have our own idea and Krishna may have his. I'll try to come in close as I can, or I'll do it in my own way. Like that. I'm my own authority. So that kind of mood then will not, one cannot factually receive this knowledge. So that adhikar is very important. Then in the next few, then he explains, Arjuna asks some questions. And these questions are about Krishna's transcendental form. And Krishna's activities. So Krishna has a doubt now after hearing this. Text 4. Arjuna said, the sun god Vivasvan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him? The personality of God had said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So Arjuna, because he's a friend, we always have to remember that this is happening in a pastime, where Arjuna is the friend of Krishna, and they're there and they're cousins, and so basically they both appeared around the same time. When Nara and Narayan come, they come together. So Arjuna is this Nara, and Krishna is Narayan. So he says, well, how is that? We just came now, and you're talking about Vivasvan. That's, millions of years ago. So then Krishna says that because his body doesn't deteriorate, he doesn't forget. So when Krishna comes, he comes by his yoga maya potency. He doesn't forget. But everybody else, when they come, they forget. Right? They forget. One is the karmi, or the the materialist, they forget, because if they don't, like, it's like at the end of your life, generally one sees that it's all useless, waste of time, and, you know, spent all this energy, and you get frustrated, you had this whole wonderful idea and so many things, and you developed your economic base, your whole family, everything, and then you found that it didn't give you any happiness, and the body falls apart, and, you know, in youth you thought you'd be so happy, now in old age you're not, you thought all the different friends and relatives were so deep, near and dear, but you find that they're not, no one cares, and all these things you figure out at the end of life, so there's a good chance one doesn't die in a very happy state. Now, if you just were born and remembered that, you know, it's like the next life, you start out from there. You know, you'd be very detached. And so, you know, in one or two lifetimes, what would you do? Because one wants to enjoy, but one has no alternative. One would be miserable. So one could only last one or two lifetimes, three lifetimes. One easily, but a few lifetimes, and then that's it. So one has to forget, so he forgets all those things. And that's on this side of it. The other side of it, let's say he was a king in his last life, and he had all opulence, but then because of some misbehavior in this life, he's a beggar. Now, as a beggar, you get conditioned to being a beggar and this and that, and you go around your activities. Whatever sphere you're in, you try to find some happiness. Now, if in this life you knew that last time you were a king and then you performed this activity, you wouldn't be able to enjoy yourself. You know, it would be very frustrating. So one forgets. And then for the pure devotee, one forgets so that there's always the freshness of the newness of the pastimes. You know? Otherwise, Arjuna remembers all these things and goes, then it wouldn't happen. These pastimes wouldn't happen. He already knows what's happening. He already knows he's supposed to fight. Krishna arranges this so he forgets all these things and makes it new and fresh like that. Like that. It was, I think in Ramayana, it's mentioned Jambavan, because he's there from the beginning. I think he's manifest. I'm not sure that he's not manifest before Brahma, or maybe he's manifest just after. He's a very unique living entity, Jambavan. So he's been there since the beginning of creation. And he's very, very powerful. Very powerful. You know, he's more powerful than anybody. That's why when he was fighting with Krishna, and after 28 days, when Krishna was satisfied with the fight, then he, you know, allowed his intelligence to work, and then he thought, hey, wait a minute. There's only one person in this universe I cannot physically defeat, and that's the Supreme Lord, because I'm stronger than anybody. But for 28 days he forgot that. So he's a very unique living entity. So when he's going through the pastimes of Ram, then, because he's kind of the elder, he's not the major mover in the pastimes, you know, it's Hanuman and all so many other personalities. Then he's like the old person, you know, grandfather and tells this and that and so many things. And he's describing how, oh, last time when in the previous yuga, previous Treta Yuga, when Ram came, then you did like this, and you were doing like that, and one time you did like this, and so he could remember all these, because he hasn't taken birth again. But you know, Hanuman, then each time it's just fresh, new, different, like that. Yeah. So then he comes to establish religious principles. He follows them himself, but most important, he comes to deliver the devotees. Like that. The pious people, he does, those who are impious. Those who are pious, he encourages, brings them closer. Those who are impious, then he's destroyed. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Baladev Vidibhushan. And Prabhupada brings that out in his purport. Lord Sri Krishna descends for the specific purpose of mitigating the anxieties of the pure devotees, who are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of the Krishna avatar is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. So then Krishna will come just to do this. Because he does all these three things at once. But specifically he's coming because his pure devotees are always thinking of him. So to mitigate their anxiety, he comes. Then next we have the various qualities to obtain Krishna. Text 9. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past become purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attain transcendental love for me. So here he's pointing out is that when you have this knowledge, then one becomes purified. So those who act with this knowledge, then they attain transcendental love for Krishna. So it's not just the work, it's that work with this knowledge. That combination makes it very, very nice. Right? As many times you see is you have one thing, it's nice, you have another thing, it's nice, but you put them together, it's not just double nice. You know, it takes on a new quality that you don't find in either of the ones together, separately. So this, when one, here, it's interesting here, attachment, fear, and anger. So you have attachment, we understand, just the desire to enjoy the material nature. This fear and anger, then, interesting here, is also because these are coming from ignorance. One is passion, attachment, fear and anger coming from ignorance. So this fear then, also then, whenever he talks, basically you can take fear, anger and envy and use them basically interchangeably. They have slightly different flavors. Like you see, fear is generally, how you say, more introverted, while then anger is more extroverted. In fear you think, in anger you don't. Like that. So it becomes very interesting in this, because it comes up a little bit later. Is that in anger then you don't think, you don't properly consider things, you just do something. While in fear you think a lot, very quickly, but you think a lot, what to do. Like that. You go through the options. Anger or you don't. But they're stemming from the same thing. Though one creates, the fear creates nirvisesh, you know, the impersonal understanding, and anger creates shunyavada. But they're both basically the same thing. We're envious of Krishna's position. We're envious of others. You know, we're envious. In text. Then next is applying this knowledge. Now, how do we know what the benefit is of this knowledge. By having this knowledge, then one can gain love for Krishna. How do we apply it? So text 11. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pita. Men in the world desire success and fruit of activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from the fruit of work in this world. According to the three modes of material nature and the words associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. All the liberated souls in ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty, following in their footsteps. So this is a key point here. As one surrenders to Krishna, he reciprocates. He rewards them accordingly. And there's only one path. Right? Krishna has entered everything, so it's all him. So there's not something separate. So the paths of karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti, they're all his path, but it's just they only get you so far. Now, the Vishwanath points out that what happens is, according to how they worship, now he's talking here about those who actually worship him. So now you have the devotee who worships, and he thinks Krishna's birth and his activities are eternal and transcendental. So therefore, Krishna rewards them that their birth and their activities are transcendental. So they will be born into the spiritual realm and their activities are transcendental. So that's what he reciprocates. In other words, Vishwanath uses the word that he reciprocates in kind. You know, you've given something, he gives you exactly the same thing back. So because the devotee worships Krishna this way and thinks of Krishna this way, he gets that result. How he thinks of Krishna, that's what Krishna gives him. Then you have the Mayavadis, who they worship the Lord. There's a group of Mayavadis who worship Krishna. But then they think his form is temporary. Maya, his activities are also, it's just a mode of goodness. He's the manifestation of the mode of goodness. But it's temporary manifestation and it's material. So therefore, he also gives them the same result, is that their activities will be material and they will get the material results. So then they just get bound up in the material nature. So the Mayavadis never actually get out of the material nature. They think they are. Aham Brahmasmi, this, that. They just go to hell. They never get out of the material world. Not in that consciousness. Then there's another that who consider that his birth and his activities are eternal and his form is a manifestation of perfect eternity. They see his appearance as transcendental and see him as transcendental, but they only understand the Sat principle, the eternity principle. So he's the perfection of eternity. So then those persons, they go to the Brahman. These are the Brahmanandis. So they go there. Because that's how they see Krishna. They see Krishna as perfect. So then they go there. Because they also go there. They attend that perfection. So it's very balanced. Just how you're thinking, that way Krishna reciprocates. So here, he makes a point. In other words, about everyone following his path, because I incorporate in myself all identities, all the processes of jnana, karma, and so on constitute the path towards me. Because he is the working principle in all of them, as will come up in the next few verses. So that means it's his path. But it's, you only get how far that you think on the path. If you see the total path, you get the end. You only see part of the path, you only get how much you see. But it's all Krishna's path. So then, next point is being brought out is that the men will worship the demigods to get a quick result. Because if you worship Krishna for a material result, Krishna will give you that result, but after some time. He waits till you're qualified, then he gives it to you, like Dhruva. He didn't give him immediately, he gave after some time. Now to the degree that Dhruva performed his worship, even though it was only 6 months, I mean, it would have taken other yogis, 10,000 or 60,000 years to get to that platform. No, he did it in 6 months. Such was his determination. Right? So, it takes a long time. But the demigods, with much less endeavor than that, then they're pleased. So you get your result very quickly. Because materialist doesn't want to wait long. He wants things quick. That's the meaning of prayas. You want it now. Like that. Or maybe I'll wait one birth, but that's all. I'm not going to wait more than that. But here Krishna then may take his time. And he purifies this so that we don't want it when we get it. Like Dhruva, then when he actually got Krishna's darshan, then he didn't want the kingdom. Krishna gave him anyway, but then by that time he was detached. He didn't want. So Krishna, he does like that. You endeavor, you want this thing, Krishna will give you, but in such a way that you lose your interest in it. This is Krishna's interest wing, right? So generally, men who want quick results don't go to Krishna, they go to the demigods. And then Krishna says that the whole society, according to the three modes of nature, because people in this world are working according to the modes of nature, the body is created, the body, mind, intelligence are created by the three modes of nature. Therefore, Krishna has made this varnashram system. And he says he's created this system, but he's not the doer. And he is unchangeable. So this is a very interesting point. Is that, see, now I have a mood. Someone comes and interfaces with me. I'm going to change. Right? Unless I'm totally insensitive brute, then I'm going to change. Someone comes and they want something or do something, or in some way react, you naturally reciprocate with that. That's just the way it is. Someone comes in one mood, you reciprocate with that mood. Because Krishna is like that, the living entity is like that in a small way. But now here, Krishna has made this system, but he's not affected by it. He's not the doer in this system, and he is not affected by it. He doesn't change. It means by us following it, then it doesn't change his mood. He doesn't get involved. It's a very interesting point that's brought out here. So basically what you end up here is that you have the living entity, the modes of nature, and the Supreme Lord. And in the previous chapter, he's mainly talking about the living entity and the material nature. And sometimes he talks like that. Other times he's talking about the living entity and the Supreme Lord. So both angles are there. So what happens is that if the living entity is thinking, okay, I perform this activity, then I'm going to get the result. Now if I think, well, the modes of nature are carrying it out, or Krishna is the sanctioner, then one would think, well, why I should get the reaction. But Krishna is pointing out the material nature and him are aloof. Because we want. Krishna has given his system. He's given the varnashram system. And you perform your prescribed duty without desire for the results. So you're not working for yourself, you're working for Krishna. So naturally there's no reaction. But when you work for yourself, you've had the desire, and that creates the result, the reaction. So the modes of nature will award that after the sanction of the Supersoul. So because we wanted it, we get it. Right? We get the reaction. If we're just working for Krishna, Krishna also doesn't get the reaction. Sometimes we think Krishna takes the karma. No, there is no karma. There's nothing there. That's one of the ideas, is we think, well, Krishna take. Krishna doesn't take. It just doesn't exist when you work for Krishna. So Krishna doesn't reward the results or the reactions. He just sanctions. So he's not doing. So in this way, he's not the doer. It's the modes of nature that are doing. He keeps saying the modes of nature. But because the living entity wants it, then he has to suffer the reaction. Here Bhurijan points out, Krishna, the material nature, and the living entities are all doers. The living entity desires to act. Krishna, as the Supersoul, sanctions it, and the material nature facilitates the activity. Yet the weight of responsibility for the action rests solely upon the living entity. Although the living entity has no independent power to act, he initiates actions by his desires, while both the Supersoul and the material nature, being neutral, facilitate their fulfillment. Yeah. So this is an important point, is that Krishna and the material nature facilitate. So you wanted it, you're given. Like that. So it's not that, you know, why Krishna has done these things. No, he's just facilitated what we wanted. He's not going to stand in the way. Right? It's very interesting that in the modern context, where there's so much of an emphasis on independent nature, that they would criticize why God is, you know, giving bad results and this and that. Because if he's actually the one doing, then we would have to be submissive and work under his direction. But here we're wanting to be free from his control. That means we do actions, we get the result. Like the child is under the parent. And if the child does something wrong, the whole neighborhood goes to the parent. The parent gets the reactions. Right? But if the child is independent, then the child gets themselves. But here, they're complaining to God, but at the same time, they're independent, at the same time thinking that God should be the one responsible. This is a very interesting concept that is happening in the modern situation. But here Krishna points out that he's not the one that's doing. He just sanctions. The material nature is doing. So he doesn't. So the living entity desires and wants. He thinks he's the doer, but he's not actually doing it. The modes of nature are doing it. So if one acts for Krishna without the desire, then there's no reaction, because the material modes of nature are working, and there's no, Maya doesn't get any reaction for what she does, when she facilitates the living entity. So when the living entity simply thinks this is for Krishna, then there's no reaction. Nothing is there. Does that make sense? And then Krishna says here that there's no work that affects him, and he doesn't aspire for the fruits of action. So one who understands this, he doesn't become entangled. The one who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of actions of work. So when you understand that there's no work for Krishna, right? And he doesn't aspire for the fruits, and there's no work that affects him, then when you think Krishna is like that, he reciprocates with you in the same way. Therefore, you have no work to perform, though you're doing it out of duty. Krishna said in the previous chapter, I do it because if I didn't do it, then others would follow what I do. So the devotee is doing that. There's no, the work doesn't affect him, and he doesn't want the reaction. So when the devotee thinks Krishna is like that, he becomes like that. In the same way, when the devotee thinks Krishna is, his birth is transcendental, his form, his activities are transcendental, then the devotee is awarded with transcendental birth, transcendental form, transcendental activities. Like that. It's just very reciprocal. How we think of Krishna is what we're going to get. Like that. So if we're upset with Krishna that things are going in this way, Krishna is going to reciprocate that way. Everybody else is going to be upset with whatever you do. Right? It's just the way it's going to go. We surrender to Krishna, then we will find that everything works very, very nicely for us. But if we want to blame Krishna or think why Krishna is doing like this, or we go to Krishna just for material things or for the fruits, that's what we're going to get. That's how we're going to get. So it's a very, very simple. Krishna states it. As you surrender, I reciprocate. Very straightforward. It's not kind of an esoteric point. It's just directly as you, whatever you do, that's how I reciprocate. Like that. But he's wanting that we will come to that transcendental platform. That's why he's coming, is speaking this Gita. One may say, well, how come Krishna leaves it like that? But he's making all endeavor to give the opportunity for us to surrender, to reciprocate with him in affection. This is what he's trying to do. Okay. Then in the next section, then he's... So one is understanding how performing these activities in knowledge, then they actually give us the proper, we're situated in the proper platform. So here's a definition of karma, vikarma, and akarma. Even the intelligent are bewildered in determining what is action and what is inaction. Now I shall describe to you what action is, knowing which you shall be liberated from all misfortune. The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. So it's very important here. Prabhupada, in his purport, he's bringing out a point made in the Bhagavatam. See, generally we think of action means, proper action is something according to the prescribed rules and regulations that will give a positive result. Then forbidden action is something that will give a sinful result. It's sinful activity, it will give a bad result. Right? And then akarma, or inaction, here, means it is transcendental activity. So now if we look at it, we can see the action, the karma, and the vikarma are both material. So when Krishna says action and inaction, then here, the action means pious and impious, and inaction means transcendental. So it's very important to understand this, because I find many times it's thought that material means sinful. Right? And in the West, there's not a whole lot of talk about pious and this and that, unless one's from an old family or old community or like that. But otherwise, not much talk. So it's a new thing that we're talking about, living nicely and being clean and dealing with people properly, like that. So then we sometimes become attracted by the pious aspects of the Vedic culture, or even of Western culture. But here Krishna is pointing out that if it is not done for him, it's material. It doesn't matter if it's pious or impious. And if it's done for him, that makes it transcendental. So the following prescribed duties for Krishna only is in action. And if you do follow the prescribed duties, even though that you want a reaction, then it's piety. You'll get a pious reaction. And if you don't follow them, you'll get an impious reaction. So now we'll discuss about... Yeah, and then this is bringing up to, and Prabhupada points out in the purport, here... The entire Gita is directed towards this conclusion. To understand Krishna consciousness and action according to its modes, one has to learn one's relationship with the Supreme. In other words, one who has learned perfectly knows that every living entity is an eternal servant of the Lord. And thus, consequently, one has to act in Krishna consciousness. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed towards this conclusion. Any other conclusions against this consciousness and its attendant actions are vikarmas, or prohibited actions. To understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn the secrets from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Otherwise, even the most intelligent person will be bewildered. So vikarma here means, when we're looking at it from the point that's actually being presented in the Gita, vikarma means anything that's being done. Vedic, non-Vedic, pious, impious, if it's done not for Krishna, it's vikarma. Right? Because it will keep one in the material world. While something that is done for Krishna, that is okarma. It means it is no karma. Comes up later, he shows. So also this point comes up here, comes up later, is that this point of seeing all living entities as the eternal servant of the Lord. This is a very important point. As we see constantly, Krishna's pointing out is that someone in this knowledge, he sees like this. He sees all living entities as part and parcel of the Lord, and himself as part and parcel of the Lord. Now this, when one can see like this, has the understanding like this, this is the first sign, or one of the main signs, of the Madhyama. The Madhyama is able to see other living entities. The Kanista has great difficulty seeing other living entities because they're so self-centered. They see themselves as spiritual master, God, and that's about it, or whoever they just need to deal with. But the Madhyama, they're able to see other living entities. So then one can be situated nicely. In deity worship, then Kapila Muni mentions that those who cannot see all living entities as part and parcels, then they don't see properly, and that worship is not so pleasing to the Lord. It's not as pleasing as someone who sees all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels, and therefore deals with them properly through the proper Vaishnava etiquette and culture. So it's you can understand how someone deals by how much they see other living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. How they deal. They deal properly according to etiquette, that means they're seeing like that. They don't deal according to etiquette, means they see less. They may have the knowledge, but it hasn't become understood where it actually has some, it's practically applied in the life. So this point is a very important point in working nishkam karma. This one has to understand that one is, all living entities are part and parcels of Krishna. That way you understand yourself is. Because if you understand yourself is, you understand everybody is. Right? Someone who's Brahman understands they are Brahman, sees everything as Brahman. So if you actually see yourself as part and parcel of Krishna, then you'll see everybody else like that also. So if one doesn't, one may say, well, I see myself but not others. It doesn't work like that. Like that. Once it goes together. Then, the next section, then the qualities and results of this knowledge. 18. One who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. One is understood to be in full knowledge whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burnt up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Abandoning all attachments to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruit of action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So one can understand this, who has knowledge, is that he is free from these desires. He does understand his position. And he acts like that. Then one has the knowledge. We're not acting means our knowledge is not complete. So here he says full knowledge means it's understood right now. We're hearing. We're gaining some knowledge. So knowledge is there. But when it becomes full means we realize and we're able to act on it. So the whole process is to try to endeavor for this. One must endeavor for this position. One must try to use the intelligence, understand, try to apply it in the life. And then with that practice, then it will come. Okay. And it says here, abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities, but he is performing all, engaged in all undertakings. So it doesn't mean one gives up the activities. It just means the attachment for it. And one is satisfied, independent meaning He is not dependent upon what will, that his life will go by what he has, doesn't have, this, that. It just depends upon the Lord. He performs his activities. What comes, he's satisfied. Giving up a sense of proprietorship over possessions, it doesn't mean we neglect. So this is the difficulty. In material life, we take care of something because we're attached to it. It's the same. Proprietorship turns sand into gold. When it's ours, then we become attached to it, so we work very hard to maintain it, take care of it. If it's not ours, we don't care. But here we're doing it for Krishna. It's the duty to take care. So we're being asked to act without this attachment. So this is a very new thing. It's a very unique thing that you're doing the activities of someone who's attached. In other words, karma is for those who are attached, right? But, and jnana is for those who are not attached, but do no activity, right? So we're being asked to do the activities of those who are attached in the mood of detachment, like those with the knowledge. But they don't do any activity. So by doing both, right? In other words, you have to go through karma for life and life and life, more lifetimes, major lifetimes. Then after so much of that, if one is actually followed nicely and is pious, then one may come to the platform of jnana. Right? And after so many lifetimes of that, thousands and thousands, maybe you'll come to the platform of liberation, and out of that very few will come to realize Krishna. So now what's happening is we're speeding this process up by taking the activities of karma with that knowledge of jnana. In other words, what takes millions of lives on one side and millions on the other, we're taking both of them and putting it together, and then it, so many millions of those who are maybe Brahma, Buddha, and come to the platform of you know, actually coming to Krishna consciousness, we're taking all that together and putting it in one place. And that is nishkam karma. So it's a very dynamic and powerful process that Krishna is giving here. So one has to take this very nicely. You know, one has to understand it. Because we see, those with jnana keep no possessions. Those without jnana keep so many possessions. So now we're being said, you have your possessions, you have your activities, but you act on the platform of knowledge. So you don't have the attachment for them. Then this becomes devotional service. Therefore, according to the modes of nature, one situates oneself. Whatever is the situation of the mind, the intelligence, you know, the situation of the brahmachari, the grihastha, the vanaprastha, sannyas, it doesn't matter. Because whatever you're doing, you're being doing it for Krishna. So technically there's no difference between any of them. Because they're all absolute. They're all being done for the Supreme. They're all sat. It's just a matter of if one understands that. Then here is even more than the example is given, even one more advanced. Then one who is satisfied with gain comes of its own accord, who is freed from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. So this person is dependent on Krishna, what he sends, fine. Doesn't send, doesn't matter. Free from all duality means the Brahma-Bhuta platform has been attained. He does not envy. Means you get to Brahma-Bhuta, you can still be envious of Krishna's position. I mean, you start from that platform, right? Tatastha means you're in the middle, right? You have material activities on one side and you have pure devotion on the other. So what's in the middle? The Brahma-Bhuta platform. So that is a platform from which you can choose. So you can be envious of Krishna on that platform. So free from envy means now one can move forward and take shelter of Krishna. You know? And you can see that in their activities. In success, failure, the study, it doesn't matter. They're doing whatever they're supposed to do, they do it. Because that's what is their nature, they do it. It doesn't matter. and they're never entangled. Example is given of Madhavendra Puri here. He would just sit under a tree. He didn't bother begging. So he was at Govindakund, near Govardhan Hill. And then Krishna, through one of the local, Krishna himself came and gave him something to eat. You know, he came and said, I live around here and we have a rule here, no one goes hungry. So Krishna brought something. So he's just dependent on the Lord. Yeah. So if one is unattached to the modes of nature, then and is situated, fully situated in transcendental knowledge, merges entirely into transcendence. So if we're partially situated, then we partially. But the point is that unattached to the modes of nature means the modes that, as we learned before, Krishna has pointed out, it's the modes that are doing the things. Krishna sanctions it, we desire it. So who's actually doing all the work is the modes. But we're unattached to the modes. So what happens is we desire it and we're attached to the reactions that the results that the mode, working with the modes is going to give us. Right? So we give up that attachment. That doesn't mean that one is not working with the modes, because modes are going to move things. It's not that the modes aren't moving. But it's just that now, because it's being done for Krishna in knowledge, then it becomes transcendental. It's a very, very subtle point. Like that. Very subtle point. Yeah. And Krishna points out that one is going to attend this spiritual kingdom because of one's full contribution to these spiritual activities. So same point of reciprocation. We surrender to Krishna and we're fully committed. So then Krishna is fully committed to us. So naturally that works. So that's what, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So the consummation basically seems to be what is mentioned here is the process in which the thing is accepted by the Lord. In other words, the specific ritual that is being done. Just like you're worshiping the Lord through the fire. So then there's things that are offered into the fire. So the rituals in which that's done so that the Lord can accept that. Or you're worshiping the deity. And then those rituals through which the offering can be offered. So that means that the mood, what you're doing, everything is being done perfectly for Krishna. You're following the ritual, which is what is the consuming agent. But only for Krishna. You don't want the result, it's for Krishna. Otherwise, if you want the result, how Krishna is going to get it, how he can accept it. I do the activity, I offer something, but I want the result. How Krishna can accept it? So we have to give that up. And then it becomes very, very nice. And then, the next section, that Krishna goes through all different kinds of sacrifices that are there on this path, and how they ultimately, they lead to transcendental knowledge. Text 25. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some of them offer sacrifices in the fire of Supreme Brahman. Some, the unadulterated brahmacharis, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control, and others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through the control of the mind and senses offer the functions of the senses and of the life breath as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, practiced by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming, and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others, curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. All these performers are known, who know the meaning of sacrifice, become cleansed of sinful reactions. And having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifice, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere. O best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Partha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So here Krishna is showing that by following the Vedic prescriptions of sacrifice, even if it's for a material purpose, you will end up with knowledge. So therefore, you should perform this, your activities, with knowledge. That's better. Here you're just doing the activity, it will give you knowledge. So if you have the knowledge, then how much better your result? Right? So much better will be the result. So it gives the whole different, the brahmacharis, then they control the senses, and they hear. In other words, their business is to learn. They learn and control the senses. Grihasthas sacrifice the senses into the sense objects. So that means while the senses and the sense objects are being engaged with each other, then they are seeing this as sacrifice. They're following the rules and regulations given by Krishna for the senses meeting the sense objects. And because that restraint, that is sacrifice. Right? So that makes, he says, the regulated householders. They're doing sacrifice. If unregulated, there's no sacrifice. Senses are meeting sense objects, but it's not being done according to regulation, with detachment. Right? So it's not. One will not get knowledge from it. One will not get enlightened. So we see the process of the brahmachara, the process of the grihastha, the process of the renounced orders, is to get that knowledge. Just they use different methods of sacrifice. That's all. Different methods are used, you get the knowledge. So one doesn't, those in the Vedic culture, they don't worry what the position one's in. They follow what they're supposed to do. And they know all other, and one may be interested to see that others are following their method of sacrifice properly, so that they get the result. That is why. Like now it's become very popular that we want to make all different rules and regulations, how each different person should act. You know, sannyasi is like this, manager is like this, this one can do this, this one can do that. But what is the purpose of that desire? Is it we want them to act properly so that they perform their sacrifices with the proper understanding so they get the knowledge? And with that knowledge, then they advance back to Godhead? Or is it simply just, I'm finding some difficulty in the social structure, and I don't want any difficulty, therefore, you know, I want to restrict everybody else so that I don't experience any difficulty? So one has to seriously think about that. Because one is following Krishna's path. The other is making up your own path. Though seemingly using the tenets of the scriptures, well, sannyasis is supposed to be like this, and grihasthas and manapa like this. But the purpose of those rules are to follow them in knowledge and detachment so that one gains that understanding of Krishna. So whatever one's nature, one follows that path. Right? Just because you have a brahmacharya, you make him married, it doesn't mean he's properly situated. Or a grihastha, they take vanaprastha, or a sannyasa. Doesn't these things... So just adjusting things around. Some brahmachari does something. Okay, make him a grihastha. So this is... Yeah, this is an important point, is that they doubt the revealed scriptures. So one has to be very, very careful about doubting what Prabhupada says, doubting the Vedic process, doubting the devotional process, because then one will not get a result. It says here they'll fall down. They may fall down to different degrees, but they'll fall. The worst will be the doubt, the faithless, who knows, has heard all these things, but has no faith in any of them. That person is going to have the most of it. Then the conclusion of this whole chapter, 41. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus he is not bound by the reactions of work, O conqueror of riches. Therefore the doubts which have arisen in your heart, out of ignorance, should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So it says that doubts are understood, they'll come up. In the performance of duty, doubts come up. But that's why we've approached here the spiritual master, to get rid of those doubts. That is the point. So one who wants to get rid of the doubts, he approaches the spiritual master. He approaches others. He has faith. A doubt comes, he removes it. But those who are faithless, they don't trust anybody. So this is misgivings, what we were discussing the other day. And that's very strong, can take one away very easily. So one has to have that faith that it will. So doubts will come up. We're not saying someone has a doubt doesn't mean he's finished. No. Arjuna has so many doubts throughout the whole Gita. But he removes them step by step. How? By approaching authority. By hearing this transcendental knowledge, then armed with that transcendental knowledge, he serves. So it's pointed out here that in this last verse, that Arjuna is sitting on the chariot. Therefore Krishna says, stand and fight. Because first he has to get him to stand up. Now he's sitting down and determined not to fight. So first you stand, because you stand in the chariot when you fight. So stand and fight. And get up and do your duty. Don't be lazy. Then Prabhupada in this final purport mentions that this chapter is called Sanatan Yoga. Like that, the eternal yoga. And so there's two divisions of sacrificial actions. One is called sacrifice of one's material possessions, and the other is called knowledge of the self. So if one doesn't dovetail the sacrifice of possessions for spiritual realization, then it becomes material. So if your material facilities that you have are sacrificed, but not for purpose of Krishna or spiritual realization, it will give a material result. So in other words, they have to be sacrificed with that knowledge, with that understanding. Yeah. Then there's two levels of knowledge. One is understanding one's own constitutional position, and the other is the constitutional position of the Lord. So that's why you see Krishna sometimes talked in the beginning about the soul. And then throughout, now he's talking about his position. And he talks about the modes of nature. So in the second chapter, Prabhupada mentions the purport, and one who knows the soul, the super soul, and the material world, that is knowledge. You know, in Sanskrit it's called chit, achit, and ishwara. You know chit, what is transcendental, the soul, achit, the material nature, and ishwara, who's the controller of both. When you know this, that is knowledge. So then one has to learn about then Prabhupada points out, one must learn of the transcendental activities of the Lord. One must understand the goal of sacrifices, means to please the Lord. And one must study properly. It says here this Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says, one is therefore advised to study Bhagavad Gita or any other scripture under a bona fide spiritual master with service and surrender. One should therefore follow the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is expressed in the Gita itself. Beware of self-interested people after personal aggrandizement who deviate others from the actual path. The Lord is definitely the Supreme Person, and His activities are transcendental. One who understands this is a liberated person from the very beginning of his study of Bhagavad Gita. So that ends chapter 4. Any questions? So we can see is that the same thing that was said in 3, but the emphasis was on the development of knowledge. That you do the duties with detachment, you're going to get this knowledge. So he's talking about the glories of the knowledge. One who has the knowledge, then those who don't have faith don't get this knowledge. They fall down. So one must, in other words, the knowledge is a very important aspect. You know, Janai Vasprabhu would ask some will say, well, why do we have to endeavor for this? Why do we have to? We just do. But if one just does, one may do so without knowledge. If one does so without knowledge, the sacrifice may not be complete. Because you may forget that this is for Krishna and all these, and then these things, it may give you a material result. So with knowledge, then you get the full result. The full knowledge gives full result. So this full knowledge means my position, Krishna's position, material world's position, and the relationship. Then how to perform this prescribed duty for Krishna under the guidance of the authority, the spiritual master, with the goal of attaining pleasing Krishna and pure love for Krishna. Then that is complete. The process is complete. But if any one of those things is left out, it's not complete. You don't have the goal of Krishna. You don't follow the prescribed duties for Krishna's pleasure. One doesn't have the proper knowledge. He doesn't know who he is, or that everyone is soul. He doesn't understand the material nature. He doesn't understand the Supreme Lord. Like this, then one can't have the proper detachment and all these things required. And one will not get Krishna. So that whole thing must be there, and we see he's endeavoring for these things. He's endeavoring to understand. But it is by approaching Bhagavad Gita and approaching the spiritual master. It's not some other process. So that is very simple. Does that make sense? Yes.
What is the result?
If you act in full knowledge, the result. He mentions here, one will come to the transcendental platform. Yes. Means you're acting with knowledge. But by doing that, one gets realization. Because we see, whenever you see qualities, qualities are results of a value. And values are results of your thoughts. You know, what you're thinking. In other words, you understand when there's vigyan, you can see it in the activities. You can see it in the activities. Because the external will reflect what the internal is. It goes from thinking, you think about it, you feel it, you know, then you, and then you actually endeavor for it, you will it. So it'll come like that when these things are there. Mentions. Says, having obtained such knowledge, he quickly achieves the Supreme. Having attained real knowledge, you will never fall again into illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are part of the Supreme Lord, or in other words, they are mine. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. By acting in this understanding, then one gets the realization that one is not the body, he's the soul, all of the living entities are also part and parcel of Krishna. And then from that platform, very easily one can develop love for Krishna. See, these details will come out, I think, much more clear in the next chapter, like that. But the full, real, clear, direct answer is going to come in the middle six chapters. Right? Means details of these, really fine details of all these that what's this analytical, I mean not this analytical, but this study that is here about knowledge and about prescribed duties, that will come in the last six chapters. Because that's specifically what they do, is they get into the knowledge aspects very clearly. And the results in the devotional side of it, that's brought out in the middle six more. And this is mainly just understanding that you're to accept the prescribed duties that are given by Krishna and do it for Krishna in knowledge and detachment. Jnana and Vairag, like that. So that is what is being said here. Otherwise, the tendency is not to accept the prescribed duties, the Vedic culture, you know, the Varnashram system. Living entity is very few human beings actually accept it. It means that those who accept it are civilized, those who don't are not so civilized. So the tendency is a living entity, especially in this age, doesn't want to accept it because it means restricting the senses, restricting one's activities. And one doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to bring his nature in line with what he should do. I have my nature and I'll do whatever I want to do. And even though I'm doing things I shouldn't be doing and completely disturbing everybody, that doesn't matter because I'm happy, I'm doing what I like. Like that. So it takes all these chapters to establish that one should follow it. You follow the prescribed duties with this, you get this. And then by having this knowledge and acting in this way, then one gets transcendental understanding. And then that brings one to the perfect platform. So then you combine these two very nicely, and it's perfect. Like that. But we see as the emphasis is on different points. The flavor of this chapter is the emphasis totally on the. It's talking about the same, nishkam karma. It always mentioned activities, but the emphasis is on the knowledge. You know, how to get it, who's qualified for it, what are the benefits of it, you know, different methods to get to achieve, you know, material, and then if you want spiritual, approaching the spiritual master. But the previous was more emphasis was on the activity, the karma. Though it had the understanding or the flavor, it told about knowledge. It was kind of like you do your activity with knowledge. The other is this knowledge must be gained and torn, this is how you do it, and then you can do your activities. Okay. So it's just a slight difference in emphasis to bring out the different points. Then in later, it will be saying the same thing, but talking more about the bhakti, the devotion, and what that means. You know, you're bringing more Krishna. Here you see Krishna's not talk so much. He's just pointing out, even from the mundane platform, you perform your prescribed duties properly, you get knowledge. Like that. So now you combine that, but now with knowledge of Krishna. So in the later chapters, then he starts talking about himself more. So we know who is Krishna and everything. Does that make sense?
When it says follow your nature, you can repress your nature, if you're repressing it, and your prescribed duties, like you say, number 9, the follow prescribed duties. How do we distinguish
our,
what is our real nature?
So our
conditioned nature,
which
is like
water. Yeah. That's what it says. Okay. You can get here? Okay. No. So then, the question is that we're saying that one should perform the prescribed duties because repression of the nature, you know, what will be benefited by repressing one's nature? Same time as we see nowadays, no one wants to follow because it represses their nature, what they consider their nature. So how do you put these two together? So is that the natures fall into these four categories. Even if there's a combination, still, whatever one is commonly doing, that has to follow a particular nature. It doesn't work. You know? One may fancy this wants all of them, but when one is doing each particular one, one has to follow the prescribed duties and the moods and attitudes that go with that. Like if you're managing, you have to follow the prescribed duties and the mentality that goes along with the management. You can't manage and have another mentality and do it in the way you like. That is not, that's just unrestrained, that's animal. Like that. So in other words, we're discussing, varnashram means we're talking about human life. One doesn't want to follow that, then we're talking about uncivilized human life or animal life. It means the consciousness. We're in a human form, of course, but we have the consciousness of something, somebody uncivilized. So that we can't think that, well, that's my nature. That if our nature is to be uncivilized, then fine, but then one should live out in the forest, you know? One shouldn't live around where other people are trying to organize society, right? Because there are those who don't fit in it. Most of the living entities don't. But the human life is meant to fit in, and can fit in. But it's a matter of doing the duties, accepting that, and doing those duties, you know, whatever goes with it. You do business, there's certain mentality and things that go with it, otherwise you can't do business, right? Because it gives a direct, immediate result. It's very obvious someone's a businessman or not. And everybody will accept, well, they're not a businessman. You give them some money, they invest it in something, they try to sell it, and if they make profit, they're a businessman. They don't make profit, there's every chance they're not a businessman. They don't know what they're doing. And the person may or may not accept, but generally everyone else will accept, and it's case closed. You know, or if you're an artist, you know, hand somebody an easel and a paintbrush and some oil paints and like that, and, you know, come back after some time, and if you see a nice painting, they're an artist. If you come back and you don't, you know, then they're not. So these are, because they just, the result is what you're looking for. Right? Krishna says in the Gita that the Vaishya activities, the Shudra activities, it's the activity itself. You just do that activity. It doesn't say you need any qualities to do it. You know, it means finer qualities. But in the Kshatriya, the management, or the Brahminical activity, he only mentions qualities. He doesn't mention what they do. Right? He doesn't mention what they do. Because without those qualities, they can't do those things. So depending upon what you're doing, you have to have the nature for it. So if one follows prescribed rules, then very quickly everyone's going to find where they fit. If you have to manage according to the rules of management and get the results that you should get, then you'll either find out very quickly you are a manager or you can't work within that. Because you work in your own style, but you still aren't going to get any results. Maybe you're happier, but still nobody else is. And you follow the rules and regulations, it's difficult for you. You're getting some result, but you're not happy, though everybody else is at least neutral. So it's just a matter of giving up that selfishness. And just what is best for the whole? Where do I fit in? When you have a meal, you have your rice, you have your dal, you have your chapatis, your sabji. These have a different thing. You can combine them in different ways and all that. If the sabji decides, no, I'm going to be the chapati, will it work? It's fine, as long as you follow the rules. So then the sabji has to somehow or another flatten itself, you know, and hold itself together so you can break off little pieces. And the sabji can't do that. Right. The chapati can't say, "Oh, I'll be the dal today." Yeah, you just take the chapati and put it on the rice and see if it becomes moist. It doesn't. So like that, if one follows, very quickly it's learned where one fits. And that's the problem. The devotees don't want to follow because very quickly it will be found out what is their nature. And they don't want to accept their nature. Because of attachment to result. There's a worry of position. Right? There's a worry of position. Well, if I end up being a Shudra or a Vaishya, then, you know, it's a big calamity. Why? Because I want to be the best, the top. The big mover and the big controller, right? You know, which is fear and anger and envy. And the big enjoyer, attachment. These are the roots of this difficulty. So I'm looking for position, facility, this, that. And I'm afraid I won't get it on other platforms. So therefore, I have a difficulty with it. And someone else will be above me and they're going to be telling me what to do. I don't trust the system, right? I'm faithless. I know the scripture is there. Right? But no one has faith in it. Or it won't work for me. If I surrender and follow this process, then I may not be happy, I may not get the result. So doubtful, basically doubtful and faithless. So Krishna mentions these in here. He's not mentioning, the Gita is being spoken specifically for the devotees. As Krishna mentioned, he descends for the devotees. So like the Bhagavatam, he's not just talking about the nonsense karmi rascals outside who are ignorant, faithless, and doubtful. He's talking about in our own hearts, we have these anarthas, we have to remove them. Right? The difficulty is that we have our own agenda. We're separatist, right? Separatist means you have your own idea. I don't want to follow Varnashram because I'll be stuck in some place and I don't want to be stuck there. That's a separatist move. Krishna made the system. So if we want to follow a religious system, why we wouldn't follow Krishna's? Why we would follow our own? So that means, to do that means there must be passion or ignorance there. Ignorance in my position. Passion is I want some facilities of that I feel I won't get in this. But if they were not ignorant, they would actually understand the broadness of the system. Ramananda Rai is managing the Madras province for Maharaj Prakaparudra. He's living like a king. Right? He has Brahmins with them and people holding umbrellas over him. He's dressed up, you know, completely looks like a Vishayi. I mean, all facilities are there. He's got more facilities than, you know, probably other kings. But because he's being the governor for the king, he's a Shudra. And his art is management. So it's, you find the nature and then you situate yourself according to the rules. So if you can manage and give shelter, then there's a Kshatriya nature. If you can manage but not give shelter, then you should work under a manager who can give shelter. But you're still a manager. You know, we thought, well, I manage, I like to organize things. So therefore I must be a Kshatriya. But management doesn't... Business is also management. Brahmins are also managed. You don't have... Things aren't clean and on time in deity worship due to lack of management. Because management is there, it's happening. But it's just, what is the sphere of management? What is the mentality behind your management? So like that, it's a very well thought out system. It's Krishna made it. Krishna is complete, whatever he thinks up is complete. So it works. So it's a matter of educating ourselves, removing our doubts, and having faith in the system. Then we get the results that Krishna says here. Those three things are gone, then? then it's nice. The faithful man who is dedicated in transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. We don't, then, but ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Right? Because if you doubt Krishna and the whole system and not sure, well, what is there in this world? Because everything's just Krishna. What is there in the next world? It's still only going to be Krishna. So the system must be accepted.
We have faith in the system, but doubt that we can actually apply it in this day and age. It's faith that the system is qualifying it in this particular time and circumstance.
Yeah, so that's mentioned here also. That's the shamshayatmas. They have faith, but they are swayed by the doubt. I don't know whether this process will be effective in my case. Like that. So it's we think it won't happen. If it wouldn't happen, Krishna wouldn't be speaking this. He's speaking this right at the end of the beginning of Kali Yuga. So it's being written down by Vyasadeva. They only write this stuff down when it's Kali Yuga. They don't write it down otherwise. They just heard it. He spoke it to Vivasvan, Vivasvan spoke it to Manu, he spoke it to Ikshvaka. It just comes down like this. They spoke it. It's written because in Kali Yuga we don't have the memory to remember all this. So if Krishna's talking about it, it must be applicable now. Must be applicable. Like that. And Prabhupada is pushing it and supporting it so much. The Acharyas are talking, so it must be practical. They're not fools. Right? They understand how the material nature works, they understand how everybody is soul, they understand how Krishna's, you know, Krishna's position. So how they cannot understand the situation, and we conditioned souls know better how the material world works, and you know, and well, you know, they're transcendental, they don't really know. If you're transcendental, it means you know, and someone who's not transcendental actually does not know. Right? Because everyone is doing everything just to become happy. They're not doing it for any other reason. You know? You have Bill Gates making, you know, $30 to $40 million a day. For what reason? It makes him happy. He's not doing it just because, you know, he wants to suffer. People are doing all the different things for this. They're having families and they're building their empires and they're doing whatever they're doing simply to be happy. They have their hobbies. They have no other purpose. And if you look around, none of them are becoming happy. So if we say the real world means we don't know what the real world is. We're illusioned. We're fools. So it works. It's going on in India. Guaranteed, if you take all the first world people on the planet, you know, whatever we would call as top, you know, your, you know, top of the line, your cutting edge, and you know, Western technology development and upliftment and all these things. Count all the heads, right? And put them all on one side. And these are the people that are doubt that it can work and that it functions and applies now. And then you take all the hundreds of millions of Indians who follow it to some degree or another, and there's a heck of a lot more Indians than there are as first world people. And we see the Indians, when they work within the Western system, they can be as equal, if not more successful, than the Westerners. Because the Westerners, they're saying the real world, they don't know what the real world is. Right? It's a very interesting thing you have, you know, especially in America, it's all over the place. You have a credit card, you have no money. You can go out and get things. Or you take a loan, you know, buy now, pay later. Buy now, enjoy now, pay later. Fools follow this system.
What does real world mean?
Real world means I have something solid, and then I can do something with it. It means those who have knowledge say, I have cash, and then I buy. Right? There's a whole kind of like movement of people who have figured out that the system is just dreamt up by some really clever businessmen and how they get money out of people who normally wouldn't buy anything because they don't have money. So you fool them into thinking that this is great and nice and all this, and then you have them. Right? So they've taken a loan, they can never pay the loan back. So they just keep paying the interest. Right? And you talk to anybody who does loaning, they're not as worried about the capital as they are about the interest. Interest keeps coming. Even here in India, you have these people who are on the street sitting, you know, certain places at certain corners. You can go and borrow money from them, and then you give back the interest. And because you can never get the money together, you just keep paying the interest. And that's all they care. Like that. So it's basically the real, actual real world is what Krishna is talking about here. Do your duties without attachment in Krishna consciousness. That's the real world. The whole rest of it's illusion. Like that. So the whole point comes down is one must, you know, perform some activities. So why not perform them according to what Krishna's rules? Right? Just like, I want to do business. I can, you know, sell any nonsense and advertise anything. I can follow Krishna's rules is, you sell things people need. And don't charge too much. And that's about it. There's not a whole lot more rules for business. And then, how you know how to do business, you do it. I mean, it's not a difficult thing. So there's a few rules. You're going to manage, you want to be, you know, be an administrator, but you have to give shelter to those under you. They're people, they're individuals, you have to deal with them that way. They're not just something there for you to shuffle around and get done what you want to do, and even if they're not satisfied, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to care for them, take care of them. That's all it's saying to do. It's not saying something else. No. Same brahminical activity, you must have the qualities. You have these qualities, peacefulness, this, that, you do these things, you do these particular activities, you absorb yourself in these activities, you don't worry much about material gain. And that's what it is. You want to be an intellectual? This is all it says to do. Don't be an intellectual at the same time you're really trying to get together all kinds of money and this and that and so many different things. Don't worry about fame. That's all it's being said to do. And these aren't big deals. These are not problems. And you'll generally find that here and there some karmi has already observed that and, you know, written a book on it or, you know, has some seminar on this. But they don't know the whole picture. They figured out smart. Karmis are smart. They observe, but they don't know the conclusion. Just like the jnanis are smart, but they still haven't come up with a proper conclusion. So we can all that's being added, there's a few things. Prabhupada doesn't give a lot of details. You know, it's a very, very general, very applicable system, the whole Varanashram system. But it just means that surrender to live according to Krishna's rules. Then it works nicely. Does that make any sense? Or? I had a question. You had?
What is action and what is inaction?
What is action and what is inaction? What is mentioned here is means action in the material sense means that I'm performing prescribed duties. Inaction means I renounce those and go to the forest. Right? But Krishna points out in that action, what we're looking for is some may renounce and go to the forest, but he's still performing activities because he hasn't given up the desire for result. So even though he's doing very few activities, he's still breathing, he's still doing this and that. So it's his breathing, his this, that. So he gets a reaction for it. So he's getting karma. He's getting sinful reactions for what he does. He has to eat, he has to walk, he has to drink water, he has to breathe. He's getting sinful reactions. This is not doing for Krishna. Understand? So even though it looks like inaction, the action is there. And what Krishna is giving here, what he's recommending to Arjuna, is inaction and action. You perform your prescribed duties, but because you're not attached to result, therefore there's no reaction. That's inaction and action. Right? Arjuna will fight in the battlefield because it's his duty, but he's doing it for Krishna, without attachment, in knowledge. So there's no reaction, there'll be no sinful reaction for him. Is that understood? Anything else?
That section where you were talking about how consciousness, as you turn on to me and reciprocate accordingly, it's kind of close to Kalam Mamsa and also.
Or why would it be? Okay, well here we can. I want to get into the details. This probably is a very nice purport. Is it? Or is this Vishwanath? Vishwanath Chakravarti comments. One may say, certainly your exclusive devotees consider your birth and activities to be eternal. Otherwise, others, however, do not. In that category are the jnanis and others who approach you to perfect their own processes of jnana and so on. And they do not consider your birth and activities eternal. Krishna responds to this consideration in the verse beginning with, yea. In whatever manner persons approach me, bhajanti, I reciprocate with them by giving them the fruits of their service. It means this is what they want. So he's just fulfilling their desires. It's not that it's how we can blame Krishna for this is what they want. I mean, if someone went for a material result and Krishna, you know, made him into a, you know, big yogi or something, you know, they wouldn't be satisfied.
Well, that's just like
No, karma mimamsa is different. Karma mimamsa is an atheistic philosophy where karma is eternal. Because karma goes on, you know, from one life to the next to the next. And their thing is, because I've done it, I have to get my result. But the point is it still is self-centered because I did it. I am the doer. I get the result. But the point is it's been sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. You know, and it's been carried about by the modes of nature, you're accepting that, but it's been sanctioned by the Lord. The Lord can also not sanction it. Because I'm doing my duty, I don't necessarily have to get that result.
You're saying here, whatever you do, you get exactly the thing back.
Yeah, but you get the result. In the karma mimamsa, you don't actually necessarily get it.
Why not?
Because there is people involved. See, the whole thing is karma mimamsa is impersonal. Because I did it, I get the result.
Is it a prescribed duty? They follow
the karma? They follow prescribed duties. They're totally into following the Vedic culture. But their whole thing is just to follow the karma kanda.
But the process, if you follow that, you have to get a result. Because
that's you have to get a result, but you won't get a result, necessarily get the result. Prabhupada gives the example of the doctor does his duty on the patient. You have two patients, the same disease. Mm-hmm. The doctors perform the same treatment. One dies, one lives. Because there is the supreme control there. So karma mimamsa doesn't work.
Then the shastra is wrong. If they're following shastra, it's not giving result. Then
karma mimamsa is a bogus philosophy that has been dreamed up by somebody based on the Shastra. It's not, Shastra doesn't present Paramimamsa. The Shastras present what Krishna is saying here. They take it, do your prescribed duties, do your, he's taking all this, and then he's coming with a thing, yes, you just have to do your duties, and then I'll get my result. But he leaves out the transcendental side of it, he leaves out the demigods and the Supreme Lord are persons, you know. He leaves out that I don't even know what I've done in previous lives in my karma, so what I'm going to get, so even I try to do the things now, I may not be successful. They're in ignorance. Like that. That you do something and get a result, that's quite natural. But the karma monks is demanding it. And he's in ignorance.
When the devotee does that, then in knowledge, if you understand that Krishna is in background for a minute, it's going on, you're doing it with actual realization, but then it still doesn't go right. How do you understand that? Karma is coming in, someone else is coming in to feel it.
No. Because it's up to Krishna how he wants it to go. He says that one who is undisturbed by whether it goes nicely or doesn't go nicely.
They're still saying I'm reciprocating exactly.
Yes, but that's called at the end the result you get, not in between. See, it means the devotee goes back to Godhead because he accepts Krishna and he wants to go back to Godhead. He goes back to Godhead. It doesn't mean in between because I went out there and organized a big meeting and this and that and now everything's going to go the way and nobody may show up.
It's good. The result we're talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about the ultimate result. We're not talking about in between. Like that. Yeah, here it says, he who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure. That means there is sometimes going to be success and sometimes going to be failure. But it doesn't bother the person. One just continues doing what he can for Krishna. So the idea that there must always be a nice material result, this is a great obstacle on the path of transcendental life. Because that is the idea of the heavenly planets. Because there's no problem. So karma mimamsa is for that purpose of enjoying now and enjoying on the heavenly planets. There shouldn't be anything wrong. Like that. But we see that it actually stems from the desire to enjoy. Otherwise, then the demons couldn't have had the perfection of that. They have a heavenly situation where nothing goes wrong for them. Until one day they die, and then somehow or another that kind of wasn't in the plan, you know? So it's karma mamsa is something else. It's another thing. All it is just a way to keep people entangled in karma. It means you work, you get a result. That doesn't make karma mimamsa. Karma mimamsa doesn't have the exclusive right on that you've done something, you've got a result. Karma mimamsa is simply saying that karma is supreme. And so you want to enjoy heavenly pleasures. Therefore, always perform good karma. And because it lasts in your next life, and even when you finish that, it'll just go on. It means you may come back down again here, but you do again, and you'll go back there again. So it's all going on. It's all part of the system. It's just taking one part of, you do an activity and you get a result. But you do a material activity, you get a material result. That's all that they're encouraging. But it's not that they've dreamed up this idea that you do something and you get a reaction for that. Now Krishna's dreamed that up. That's Krishna's thing. The three modes of nature, they're doing the work. You do activity in goodness, you get a reaction in goodness. You do it in passion, you get a reaction in passion. You do it in ignorance, you get an ignorance. And he's saying, but you do it on the platform of pure goodness and you get none of these. The result you get is transcendental. It may look like it's in one of these three. But you're not bound by these. You're not bound. There's no sinful reaction. That's it. And you get transcendental knowledge, and you go back to Godhead. They've just taken this and perverted it into just the same thing, just do your karma. But it defeats, it can defeat, except for the Mayavad philosophy, the Brahmavad philosophy, it can defeat all other branches of mundane philosophy. Because it understands the soul is eternal, it understands the karma, you know, goes on, and all these different things. So they don't understand that you can't stop that karma and there's something higher. There's transcendental, and that they don't know. Therefore it's atheistic. So you can defeat Nyaya with it, Vaisheshika, and all these others with it. We're talking about rasa means exchange. So it's natural that there's exchange. That's what the living entity is looking for. He's looking for that exchange. And the impersonalists, they've had so much frustration in trying to establish proper exchange that they've just given up on the idea. Right? Like that. The karma mimamsas, they just want exchange, but only on this, on basically on the sensual level, sensual emotion level. But Krishna here is saying that we can come to the platform of transcendental exchange with the Lord and the devotees. So rasa is what we're looking for. So it's natural in that principle of rasa, of exchange. Vidati pati grinati guvya makati pichati bhukte bojayate. I act in this way, I get this result. I go up to somebody, I speak very nicely and sweetly. What is the result I get? They speak back that way. I go up to somebody, hey, what's going on here? And then they become very defensive. They act in the same way. Fact. It's natural. It's just rasa. So Krishna here is saying he's the supreme person, and we're also, and we're people. So we approach him in this way, and this is just naturally what you'll invoke from him.
If we do that in knowledge, then we see Krishna has given the result. So that's for us. That's rasa.
Result means?
Well, in any particular activity. Engaging the senses
and the senses. Yeah, we see the reciprocation of the Lord. We see the reciprocation.
So that's
reciprocation there with the devotees in their service. And then with time that gradually develops where it actually becomes more prominent. Means that reciprocation with the Lord becomes more strong. In the beginning it may be more difficult. We don't see it so much, but with time then it becomes very, very strong.
If you're doing some kind of activity, say you're doing some service, then that you can appreciate, understand that reciprocation. But even with the reciprocation amongst your devotees, you can actually understand knowledge, you'll actually
we should
see Krishna walking through
and
also
that there is a gear. Yes, that would be the reciprocation and all that. We'll see that. And that's what we're looking for. That's why if you look for the good qualities, you'll see that. You don't look for the good qualities, we won't get that reciprocation. If I'm looking for good qualities in you or others, in general I look for the good qualities. That means they're going to look for the good qualities in us. And you associate with people that you think have good qualities. Therefore, then so many people who have nice relationships with. If I just see bad qualities, I don't associate with them. They see bad qualities in me, they don't associate with me. It's just the way rasa works. So you see the good qualities, then you develop those qualities because you contemplate them, and others like to associate with you. So the whole thing is, you know, even when we're talking on that level, just the social interaction, it starts with just appreciating others. you appreciate someone else's service or endeavor, or, you know, anything, whatever, even something small. Maybe it can be improved or adjusted. Like somebody's doing something, and they're doing it. The mood is proper and this and that, but what they're doing is not necessarily right. Then you correct that. You don't disturb the mood. You just adjust the activity so that it matches now the mood. It comes in line with the proper prescribed duties. Then it works. But if we don't deal properly, then the person loses their enthusiasm, and they won't be enthusiastic to follow the prescribed duties either. Because the taste we're getting is in the relationships. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayate Gopinoda.